Well, hello, witches, and happy National Land Theft Weekend. I hope you're all at least going to have some sort of meal or, I don't know, some little special walk. I don't know, something that you might do this weekend to commemorate your time away from work, hopefully, but maybe not. That's also a thing. Ugh, man. Anyway, I hope you're ready because this one is long. This is X-rated. My good friend Scarlett and I, Blackbird, will be talking about the bad cards, the bad tarot cards, and I'm going to let you just listen and find out what those are. All right, please enjoy.
Pressed it.
I did too.
Oh, we're pressing it. Everybody's like, quit saying that. I know.
Well, you could just cut it out at the top.
But... or I could just leave it in because it's part of the charm. Something we didn't do at all last episode, so I hope you all still knew who we were. This is Hex Rated. I am Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet.
And oh man, I am in the fucking middle of the baking festivities. So I told myself I would do practice rolls for the big dinner to make sure that I can make rolls because I had a roll travesty one year. Yeah, I know. Can you believe it? No, I made these rolls and this is like a tried and true recipe that I have made 100 times. Or not. I don't know. I had made it before. It worked well several times. And then this time I made it. This was like 5 years ago. I made it. They looked beautiful on the outside. Inside was a gluey mess.
Oh, no.
And I baked them and you couldn't bake them enough. Like it was just, I underproved or I did something incredibly wrong. Anyway, problem solved because we have an A++ recipe this year and they are chef's kiss delicious.
Literally, the baker baker has given it the seal of approval.
Seal of approval. Two kinds of rolls and a flaky pastry treat.
What the fuck? Can I come over?
Yes. It's regular rolls, like cafeteria rolls, straight up. They are delicious. Uh-huh. With a bit of a tang, because I use my sourdough starter for part of it, so delish.
What the fuck?
Hold on. Wait.
I can't.
Have I ever told you about dilly bread?
No.
Okay. This is a bread that my mother, God rest her soul, or somebody rest her soul, she used to make this every year on Thanksgiving. It is like, this is a bananas recipe. It has cottage cheese in it, which, ew,
okay,
and
I'm
a
down.
Bread. Well, I don't know. I was like freaked out when I was a kid, but you cream it. So there's cottage cheese. There's like a whole bunch of dill, like just dried dill, like 2 tablespoons of dill. That's so much dill. And then just like other bread type ingredients. Anyway, it's so good. And so I decided to, it's usually you just make it like as a, like you rise it in a bowl and then you bake it in the bowl or in a casserole dish. So it's like a little round loaf and it doesn't get very high, but it does rise. It's very nice. It's light. The crumb is very light and lofty. It's not a very tight structure, but I decided to make knots, like dilly knots.
Ooh.
They're pretty good.
How did that turn out?
They're good. I left them in about 7 minutes too long. So tomorrow will be better, but... they're good. And then the third thing, are you ready for the third thing?
Yeah. I'm processing the first two. lay it on me.
You know about cheese straws, right?
Of course.
So I'm gonna make a Asiago cheese leaf. So you shape it like you take it. This is gonna blow your mind. I saw it on the Pinterest. You take a round piece of pastry dough.
Yeah.
You cut it into quarters.
Okay.
You take each quarter and you fold up the curvy end like a little hat. Okay. Are you with me so far?
Okay. Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. Now you lay the four hats on top of each other, sort of like in ascending rows a little.
Okay.
I think I did that wrong. I think you turn them on their side. Whatever. Then you stick like a straw right in the middle. And then when you pull the little hats up by their corners, it makes a little leaf.
Okay.
I will have to.
This is difficult to picture, yes. But I.
You can make
I
a leaf
you.
If you take four quarters of this thing and fold it just right and then like basically make a center in it, it'll make a fucking cool leaf. And it looks like it's beautiful. Anyway, let's hope that doesn't go banana because I did not practice that shit. I'm just going to try them. Okay. And then if they don't work, I won't take them. So. And I'll just have.
I very much like that your practice round is actual practice, because my practice round would be for me rolls.
Right.
And then the second round would be the for everybody else
well,
rolls.
Well, that's what's happening. Right. So like.
Right. But it would not be some kind of scientific, like, let's hone this. It would be like, no, I'm purposely baking two batches that I can just. Gorge myself on my own baking.
I can't say
in a piece of my own home.
Didn't think about that. I did think that. Oh, like, I can't say that wasn't the intention. It was more just like, okay, well, here's some shit that I haven't tried before. I better try it first, because what if I bake it and I need to take it and it's garbage? You know, like, I know it's not gonna be garbage, but what if it's not like good? I can't put my name on something inferior. Anyway. They would not give a shit. They would be fine with it. It doesn't matter. Key lime pie also tomorrow. So.
Oh.
Yeah. I got shit to do.
Wow.
It's the holidays. I'm not getting paid for this. And I've been on vacation. And that has been a delight. I got up early this morning and went to Trader Joe's. Spent way too much money on frivolous things like cat toys and dumplings. I love that you can buy both of those things in one place that is not Walmart. And then I did my notes for this show tonight. I can't wait to talk. But first, tell me what's going on with you.
Well, promptly after I stopped recording with you, was that a Saturday or a Sunday? Well, anyway, Sunday night, I was feeling a little poorly. I was kind of getting the tickle in my throat. Mm. And I went to go see a movie. And during the movie, like, my eye was like, because it had been like filling up with goo. Aww. And we get out of the movie and I go to like, you know, hit the bathroom and wash my hands and everything. And my eye is like totally swollen.
Oh, Jesus.
It looks like, you know, like I got stung by a bee and then it also punched me.
No.
So I was like, I don't know what's happening. Let's go to the emergency room because I don't want to sleep with some kind of infection in my eyeball.
Right. Like all of a sudden you wake up and you are blind. That would not be
ideal. Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, obviously part of the problem is that I spent a week knowing that Mr. Scarlet had strep throat and I was like trying to avoid it.
Yeah.
And so when I started feeling not great, I should have taken action then. So we'll see if I learn my lesson in the future.
Well,
but this time I did not, because Mr. Scarlet was having a lot of trouble swallowing, and being the throat goat that I am, that was not bothering me. My entire esophagus is dead to sensation.
The throat goat. I'm sorry. I had not heard that term. I love it.
I have no gag reflex. Anyway,
hot.
So yeah, so the strep throat or whatever bacterial situation I had basically spread to my ears and my nose and my throat and my eyeball.
Oh my God.
So I then, got some ointment for my eye.
Uh-huh.
They were not drops. It was like the consistency of like
Neosporin.
Yeah, I've had to
do it. It's bad.
It's just, yeah. So anyway, so I'm finally over all of that.
Well, I could not tell you had gone through this ordeal. You look great, but Jesus.
Well, thank you.
Oh my God.
I've been getting a lot of compliments on my glasses. Yeah, I don't know if I've shown you these glasses before. I'm going to hold them up.
Yes.
They've got, they're little snicky snakes. Do you see?
Oh, yes. I love them. They are amazing cat eyes and they have snakes on the edge. Yeah, I really like those and I think I need them. They are lovely. I like them.
I will send you the link. There's several different foreign places. Yeah, they were like less than $30 because it's like $7 for the frame. And then
do you put prescription lenses in it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I have like a, because I'm blind.
Yeah.
It's like whatever it normally costs to get the prescription and then plus $12 because they were like, we got to use the thick glass for you.
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't have to wear glasses
anymore. Thick thighs, thick glasses. What up?
Nice. I don't have to wear glasses anymore for my actual eyesight, but I've started wearing these blue light blocking glasses and they're not attractive. They're fine. I do think they work. The unfortunate part about it, them being cheapy, is that holy shit, I have to like clean them every 5 seconds, which is almost not worth the $15 I paid for them. But I don't know. I feel like I am getting less headaches, but that could also be attributed to my amazing hormone situation. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucking rocking. Oh, I got reblonded and
it looks fantastic.
Mr. Blackbird sent me a message through Instagram. This is my husband. Sent me a message through Instagram that said, "You are turning into Dave Gahan." Where I promptly said, get Dave Gahan's name out your mouth, you non-Depeche Mode loving person. What are you talking about? And then he proceeded to send me the video from, like, I don't know, 1982 of Just Can't Get Enough, where Dave Gahan has a full-on, like,
everyone's least favorite Depeche Mode song. Let's be real.
I don't look. And anyway, even if I did, what's it to you? Like, I don't look like Dave Gahan.
He should be so good.
He should be. He's hot. He was a hot boy.
I mean, we will be real. It's the voice that's the sexiest. Although yeah. I would say you have a very sexy voice as well.
Thank you. I was always partial to the Martin Gore section of Depeche Mode. So, you know.
Oh, hey.
Well, you know. What are you
doing? Saw a meme and I'm going to try to remember what it said because I meant to send it to you. But it was.
I need it.
It was so the Smiths see the misery of life and find the humor in it.
Yes.
The Cure sees the misery of life and finds the beauty in it.
Yes.
And then Depeche Mode sees the misery of life and is strangely turned on.
Yep. That is 100% true. 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 Can attest. So true. I know what I else had to tell you about today.
Words in my mouth.
Words no good.
On the microphone.
No, boy, no. I had a magical experience. So...
Oh, shit. Well, this is a witchcraft podcast. Oh, shit. So let's talk about it.
Imagine that. What? You're gonna talk about witchcraft, they say. I thought you were going to just talk about roles for the next 30 minutes, which I know you all are here for anyway, so just shut the fuck up. All right. So Saturday, the Day of Titans, last Saturday. Wait, this past Saturday, it was just, what, that was just, what, 4 days ago?
Today's Tuesday.
Yeah, I have.
Well, I can't do math.
You're
asking me to know what day of the week it is?
I'm on vacation. I don't have any concept.
Out.
I know. So I decided I would, like, just, I don't know, chill in my room with all my shit and maybe try to journey or something. So I was started listening to the new Andre 3000 album because it's like Flute, which is
it's wild.
It's fucking amazing. Like it was good, but then I had to it's different.
Go ahead.
It's different.
No, it's very good ambient music. It is not something I would be like rolling down the street listening to on the radio.
No.
But it is really good if you're just like hanging out in your room with the lights low.
Which is what I was doing.
Vibing.
Yes. I was vibing. I was vibing with Andre, and then I was like, you know, like I just got this feeling came over. It's like I need to like have some Greek influence, so I searched Greek relaxing music, and there was this playlist with this fucking amazing shit. I don't have my phone with me. This amazing band that's like Greek fucking Bauhaus. It's only, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, it's a little, there's a little element of like you feel like it's a little cheesy sometimes, but it's not. It's just like different instruments than we're used to. The whole playlist was great because there was a lot of just like, it's a lot of just like finger plucking guitar and lyre, etc.
Yeah, it's like ancient instruments. Yes, and stuff, correct. Yes. It's sort of like historical.
Yes. But then like then I was just like laying there vibing, and here comes this like literal Peter Murphy voice in Greek. I was like,
oh, I didn't get to that part.
Yeah, fuck. No, I need to give you that song in particular. It was amazing. So while that was happening, I was also just like thinking about something that we had talked about, because we started talking about our moon signs. And
oh, yes.
I always forget that mine is in Scorpio, which
I don't know how you could possibly.
I don't know how I forget it either.
Because it is so totally you.
It is totally me. And then I messaged Scarlett, was like, holy shit, is that why I'm so into Serket, the scorpion goddess of ancient Egypt? And she said, lols, I've never thought about that. But you didn't say lols. So my God, I've never thought about that before. I was like, I didn't either. So while I was vibing and thinking about Serket, I just got this really strong image in my head of Serket. And she was like very tall, very black, and very with lots of gold accoutrement. I was like, fuck, I think it might be Grace Jones. So
yes,
I immediately, after vibing, downloaded an AI dumb app, was like, draw me Grace Jones as Scorpion Queen of Ancient Egypt. And were not the results fantastic?
It is exactly as described, and that is 100% totally how Selket looks mm-hmm. to me.
Well, either way,
sorry, Selket, just I say Selket because that's just whatever I learned first, but the letter in ancient Egyptian is R or L.
Oh, okay.
In some languages, like in English, we pronounce them distinctly, but in other languages, they're kind of blended together. Like in a lot of Asian languages, you know, obviously it's like a common racist joke that people have trouble pronouncing the two, but that's because in a lot of languages that aren't English, they are perceived as sounding very much the same. It would be like the difference between like S and Z, like Z and S can often be quite interchangeable. It doesn't sound like a different word.
Right. I think I learned her as Selket too, but then I've just, I guess in the last few years.
Yeah, but anyway, that would be why we are both saying it differently. That's just the one that I learned.
No, that's good.
And also, there's a lot of different, it's being transliterated from Egyptian hieroglyphs, so the spelling is up for debate, as well as the vowels, which we've talked about before.
Yes.
So anyway.
I told AI more gold, and it did that for me. So it was like... I was very impressed with the AI art bot. So that happened. So that was really quite a magical experience that evening.
I love it.
I didn't really have, like, I was, oh, I did get a message. What am I talking about? Oh my God, I forget. See, journeys happen and I do all this stuff and I'm like, I don't know what happened. I just like, no, I did this spread. It was just like a 3-card spread that was like, get a message from Hecate. And the first card was leave this energy behind. The middle card was, you know, dig into this energy. And the last thing is a message or a protection, a symbol of protection. So one second, let me grab these cards because I forgot what they were. Vamp, please vamp.
Oh, what am I going to vamp about? La, la, la. Shit. Fuck. I am going to try to bake some Basque cheesecake. There is a spot near me. So as you know, I'm in love with Sugar Pine Creamery up here in Plano.
Oh, yes.
But I found another little Asian ice cream parlor.
What?
And
how is that possible? And
it's new. It's called Churn and Bake. I discovered them because they're on DoorDash and they have like very cheap delivery fees.
Oh man.
And so, you know, like if it's like 8 o'clock and I'm like, God damn it, I want some ice cream.
Yeah, you do.
And so they have several flavors of Basque cheesecake, including durian, which I've actually never had durian.
Yeah.
Pandan tres leches cheesecake.
Okay.
Tiramisu.
Mm-hmm.
And God, what was the other one? Anyway, they're all amazing. But yeah. The real showstopper is they have a Vietnamese coffee rocky road.
Shut the fuck up.
You will be furious when you taste this.
I will punch a wall.
It will make you so angry because it is so stupid good. It is strong ass, strong Vietnamese coffee. Like, they were not pulling any punches for delicate little...
like flower cottage,
Starbucks,
like,
palace,
frail,
yeah.
Like,
no,
not
no, no.
Frail.
This is like,
no, it's for,
this
it's
is
for
very,
men.
Very strong. It's, yeah, and it's got like a swirl of
condensed milk,
milk in it, and then it's got like little, like almost like little like coffee grounds and cacao nibs mixed together.
What?
So the chocolate element is not like big chunks of it. It's like little flecks.
You're killing
me. Oh my God.
I am sad.
It is unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. It would be like,
it's outrageous.
I would eat
it
and be like, oh, so mad.
Yeah.
It would be like us going through Sri Lanka looking at all the beauty and me being angry about it.
Yeah. No, they have a few other ones. They have the, a caramel crack flavor, which I don't know if I've ever made you those, but there's like a fake like toffee that you can make, which is like you lay saltines out on a pan.
Yes.
And then you basically put like brown sugar, butter,
yeah. It's
caramel
delicious.
Toffee, whatever. And then you put chocolate over it and you put it in the oven for a second to just let it melt.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's salty and buttery and caramelly and chocolatey. So they basically made like some ice cream with that shit in it.
Jesus Christ, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It is also very... Okay, so anyway.
Okay.
That's ice cream corner.
It's an excellent vamp, by the way. Okay, so back to my message from Hecate. Sorry, I don't know why I'm interchangeably saying that tonight too. So the first card I used I didn't know I was going to do this when I picked a deck that evening, because sometimes I just like be like, what deck is speaking to me tonight? And I had picked, not knowing I was going to do the Hecate thing, the postcards from the liminal space. So and this deck has like the drawings are crude, but to the point, which I enjoy. So the first card, the energy I'm supposed to leave behind, and interestingly enough, it was the only one that turned upside down, was a card called The Cloud. And if you look at it, it's got a very scary, scary lightning bolt cloud.
Ooh,
it's very
yeah.
scary. So yes, I would like to leave scary lightning bolt energy behind. But the meaning of this card is more about the like the collective unconscious. So
okay.
I thought that was interesting to be the energy that I need to leave behind. Like, I don't know how much more like inside myself I can go. I'm like 8 levels into Inception in myself, but okay. Apparently that is what I need to do. The next card, which was energy that you want to hold on to, and I thought this was crazy, is called Haunted by Ghosts.
Yes!
So
yes!
How I interpret this in my life right now is there is some unresolved business or unresolved feeling that I need to deal with. And I think I know what it is, but I'm not sure. So I'm still ruminating on what is the actual thing that I need to like resolve. So that was that. And then the last one, I mean, I don't know how good this reading could have been. It's like, why is it always right? Because it just fucking is, which we will get to tonight. The last card was like the spell of protection or a message of protection. And it's a card that has a little house on it, like a little drawing of a house with a little family, a little dog, a little sunshine, little tree. Then there's a scary motherfucker up in the window.
Yes.
Here, I don't know if you can. Can you see
oh,
that?
Oh, I love it! Oh my God.
Anyway, the name
That's
of this
wonderful.
Card,
it's like a dude.
It's
I
like a
I had a drawing like that as yeah. a child. But they, yeah, and then there's like one thing where they're like, "Who is that?
What's that?" And you're like, "That's Samuel or whatever, and it's like, you're scary.
No, I have one. It might still be on my parents' fridge because it was on my grandparents' fridge for a while. So it was, I drew it when I was at Creative Preschool. It was called Creative.
I love that.
I wasn't describing it. but I must have been 2 or 3.
Okay.
And I remember it very distinctly because I remember drawing it. And so I started drawing it, and I drew what was going to be me first.
All right.
But I drew it in a black crayon. And then I was like, no, I should color code them. So then I went back and drew me as red, my dad as blue, and my mom as like pink or purple.
Okay.
So then I brought it home, and my parents were like, wait, who's this girl? Who's like your shadow? I was like, well, that's me, but.
But.
And they're like, oh, okay.
It's you, but what?
Yeah, so there were two of me, and one is black and one is red.
Well, that's pretty normal. I mean, that's like very astute, very intuitive. I love it.
Yes.
Well, anyway, the name of this card is, and this is very apropos in relation to my job, I think. It is called "The Dream Always Comes Disguised as the Nightmare."
What?
But also, that is also vice versa. The nightmare always comes disguised as a dream. So this is like I took it the way it's printed on the card, which is the dream always comes disguised as a nightmare. I'm 100% dreading whatever's about to happen with my job, even though it's going to mean some good things. It's going to mean a whole fuckload of bad things. I mean, it's just a lot of work that I am not ready for or possibly able to actually do. So. But it clearly could be a really good thing. So maybe I just need to fucking wait. I mean, that's pretty. So anyway, I thought it was very apropos. So I've stuck them all inside my little cinnamon bowl that I got in Sri Lanka. Remember this little bowl? It's a little bowl that they put cinnamon design of the bowl. It's like cinnamon bark. And when you, I don't know if it still does because it's a long time ago now. But if you rub it, you can smell the cinnamon on it.
Ooh.
I don't think you can still smell it. No. I gave it to my mom for a long time. And then when I found it in her apartment, I was like, I'm taking this back. This is my bowl. I love it. So anyway. Okay. That was my Saturday. It was very magical. Lots of fun. Lots of good messages. Feeling good. Feeling a lot better.
Excellent.
Yay.
Well, we have a lot to talk about.
I don't know that we're going to do this in one shit, right?
I don't think we are either, but I say we just start word vomiting and see where we end up. Last episode we had talked about, because we were talking about Death Cafe and everything, and we had mentioned maybe trying to pad out the episode talking about the Death Tarot card, which we did not need to do.
No.
We had plenty to talk about.
Yes.
But then I suggested maybe we could do a trio of bad cards.
Bad cards. Bad cards.
So we're here to talk about the bad card.
The baddest of the bad cards.
And what card is more scary than death.
It's so metal.
It is pretty fucking metal.
Except it's literally not that. I mean, it is a scary card, but
you know what? I'm gonna correct this. I'm gonna say death is very goth and the devil is pretty metal.
Yeah, okay. I'm yes.
Devil's pretty metal.
Yeah, cuz death is pretty goth. It's very introspection time. Introspection time for you. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about a little bit of the history of this card. The things that I found was that it is the number 13. It is card number 13 in the major arcana. And that is for the lunar cycles in a full year. Thinking that when you come to the end of the year, you have now completed an entire cycle, which is much like the death card, its representation of cyclical transition. I also read that in the 15th century, the card has been both portrayed at that moment in time. It was portrayed as both Death the Invader, which is usually a skeleton on a horsey. I make that sound real cute and fun, but no, he looks like he's going to fucking impale something. And then Death, the alter ego, which is probably the image that most people are more familiar with, where it's a solitary figure kind of standing by itself. So in one on one aspect, in the same century, you're having cards portrayed as like this apocalyptic horseman, like scorched earth rampage dude. And then on the flip side, there's also this card that's depicting this figure, sometimes with a scythe, that is more contemplative. Like you're supposed to be kind of turning inward to think about your relationship with change. What did you find out?
Well, that's really interesting about the 13, because I didn't think about the lunar cycle. Mm. Obviously, the major arcana, we've got 0 through 21. Some of the numbers quite clearly correspond to something in particular. Some of them seem to just kind of be like, well, we didn't know where else to put this, so it's going to be this number. But 13, obviously associated with bad luck, yeah, and things like that. So it is a very ominous sort of number.
Indeed.
But I like the idea of it being a symbol of...
like a,
of the lunar cycle,
yeah,
being like, you know, a beginning and an ending. So going to the Waite-Smith deck, there's a lot of like really interesting coding into that. And that would be this version of Death the Invader. Death is on a white horse. So, you know, Death riding on a pale horse. We're talking about Book of Revelations, mm-hmm, Horseman of the Apocalypse.
That's right.
In full black armor, pretty gnar. Yeah. You've got a field of people as he passes, either splayed out dead or dropping to their knees, dying.
Yes.
It's pretty fucking gnar. What is interesting to me is that, and this is an innovation that we would credit to Waite or Pamela Coleman Smith, in the far right horizon, there are two towers and a setting sun, and those are the same two towers that are in the moon card.
Ah, nice.
So there's kind of a little narrative going on, yep, that, you know, this gateway to, obviously with the moon, it has to do with intuition. In the moon card, these two towers are centered, and then the moon is rising up in between them. So it's sort of this liminal space. It's sort of this gateway to the unconscious, sort of being between the worlds, between life and death.
Right.
Whereas in this card, obviously setting sun, referring to, you know, end of a cycle, end of a 24-hour period, end of a life. One of the things I was kind of trying to research is the death figure is holding a black banner with a white rose on it.
Oh.
So, and it's like a Tudor rose.
Huh.
Not a Tudor rose. It's a Yorkist rose.
Right.
The Tudor rose is the York and Lancaster rose. So
right.
British history, you guys. The Yorks were white. And I was trying to find why that would be the case, either just because it's a very nice, pleasing, abstract kind of symmetrical depiction of a rose. If that was it, I did find that there was some kind of battle in Prussia.
It's a red rose?
No, it's a white rose.
Oh, it's a white rose. Well, you lay those at graves all the time.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
So that being a symbol of death.
Yeah.
But I don't know why it's specifically a Yorkist.
Oh, yeah.
Rose, as opposed to just, you know, rose in profile or a rosebud, or you know what I'm saying? It's
well,
like this stylized.
Was it the design at the time? Clearly it was like.
No, going back to the, let me look at some of my older cards right here. If you vamp for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I can vamp.
That is not a part of some of these older cards.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was something that Waite or Smith came up with.
I was going to say, there were a lot of images in the Letitia Barbier book, and I did not see any roses on any of them. And I was looking, but she has probably, like, there's 20 different cards. And I don't know, this is skipping ahead a little, but I wanted to talk about my two favorites that I found. One is from an Egyptian-styled Atelier.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I even speak French.
I fucking did the pronunciation earlier and I can't remember. I think it's Atelier. Yeah, that's what the little lady sounded like. Anyway, I wanted to tell you about these two cards. One, the one from the Grand Atelier, is this floaty skeleton with this goth ass robe. It's floating like a ghost with a big ass scythe. And then he's got something in his fucking hand. Hang on. What is that? I didn't see this earlier. It is like a... Oh, it's weird. It's like a lantern with wings on it.
Oh, is it like a hourglass or something?
Yeah, maybe. It might be an hourglass, but it's got wings, the thing. And anyway, he's rising up from a grave. It's very fucking... Nice. It's very cool. And then the second one I liked is from... La Petite Oracle des Dames from Paris, 1807. Oh, the first one was France, 1850 to 75. This is 1807, so a little earlier. And it's got two images. One is like the standard skeleton with a scythe. There's a pyramid in the background. There's a temple looking thing, a couple of ships. And then on the other side of the card, there's a kneeling figure that looks like they're mourning, like at a grave with a big tree. It's very cool. Anyway, those are my two favorites.
My favorite is now I can't remember the name of the deck, but it was by an Italian artist who did a refurbished version of the Visconti deck, which is a historical medieval deck.
Yes.
But then was after doing that, like basically repainting and restoring it, he was inspired to do his own. And his death is a skeleton that is dancing with a scythe.
Ah.
But in the pose of Shiva, Nataraja, so neat. Dancing the dance of destruction.
Yeah. Ooh, I like
so
that. Yeah.
It's very beautiful and very macabre. Interestingly, I was talking about that. I have a whole Dropbox of folders and folders and folders of every deck ever. But it's a version of the Itela. It's not the original one, but this particular one I'm looking at it's just a skeleton, and he is also doing like a little jig. He looks very much like in certain traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, there's usually like a male and female skeleton couple that are dancing and like, you know, they're like kicking up their heels and they got both arms in the air and they're doing a jig. And so it's this idea of like sort of confronting death or horror or despair.
Well, you know, Barbier
and
talks
juxtaposing
about
it with
She yeah. talks about that in her book too, about how it reminds her of a lot of medieval art, like this dance of death art, where a skeleton is depicted with you know, any number of like high society kings, queens, popes, and they're dancing. So this is a very common, like this dancing theme with skeletons is very common. And right, like it means like basically being hand in hand with like confronting it, right? So right. Yeah, fantastic. What else? Let's see. Do we want to talk about some of the images?
Yeah, definitely. So some of the images, like I said, the Smith-Waite ones usually have this white rose. I've also seen cypress, which is traditionally cypresses are associated with graveyards
mourning.
Or cemeteries,
yeah.
And mourning. A skeleton, sometimes on a horse, white horse, setting sun, graves, vultures. I have the Tarot of the Old Path, which is a specifically pagan deck, has a lot of flower and bird and flora and fauna type symbolism. So it has a death's head moth and an owl on it, which obviously death's head moth got a skull on it. Pretty obvious. Also owls being often an omen of death.
But then that card is called the close. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's neat.
And it's very beautiful. I don't know if you can
see it. I can see it. It is beautiful. Ooh, I like that.
So it's your typical Grim Reaper guy who's on the left, and there's a forest of cypress behind him, and there's like kind of a river, and then he sort of fades into out of shadow, and then on the right side, there is a little bebe.
There sure is. Oh, who is that little bebe?
Well, he is life.
Is he the symbol of rebirth?
Yes. Nice. So this card is very explicit in its being like, this is not literally about death.
Right.
And then the other one that I have a physical copy of is pretty fucking rad. It's the Pagan Otherworlds, which is painted. It's a modern deck, but it is painted to look very much like these very stylized, like late medieval, early Renaissance style ones. But this Reaper is like swinging that side. He's not like, just walking around it. He's got it like overhand over his head. So
it's like totally.
He's really cutting him down.
He means it. He means business. Well, you know, the deck that I learned with, or that I started reading with when I was just a wee teenager. It's the Mythic Tarot. So death is Hades. He's got a death mask on. He's got two little people kind of asking him for something. I mean, he's got his hands out. I think they want to like get across that river. And then there's some very like pastoral looking hills in the background. But he is a very looming figure. He takes up almost half the card. So, but that has always struck me as very like I didn't ever learn first with that, with the horse image, with the invader image. I never learned with that. So when after we get past the meanings, I thought our personal notes were very interesting because they're very deviant from each other, if you know what I mean. So some of the meanings that I associate with this card, for sure, when they come up in a spread for me or for other people I'm reading, are like, it is a close of a chapter. It is an ending. There is a transition happening. There is change happening, clearly. There is possibly an elimination or a cutting away of things that don't serve you. There's also an element of inevitability and possibly purification, or definitely rebirth. So those are the things that I associate. And then if reverse, like I kind of read a lot of reverse cards the same way. Either the energy to me is either blocked, or it is already happened, or it is not quite in its full fruition yet.
So lots of beginner tarot books go ahead and right out the gate are like, it doesn't mean a literal death.
Yeah.
And they're very right. over the top about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to over sanitize the tarot, you know, but it in fact does not usually mean someone's literally going to die. And if you're reading for people that are not familiar with the tarot, that usually really freaks them out.
Yeah. They don't understand
But like you were saying, it usually has to do more with like kind of the death of a situation.
Right.
Or coming to terms with sort of your emotions about something, or so basically a period of mourning, but not like someone literally died or someone is actually going to die or anything like that.
Right.
So yeah,
they're very
ending,
yeah,
transition, change. So usually the advice I would give to that is like, things are going to change anyway.
Yep.
So you should embrace the fact that you are clearing the way
right.
for something new.
Yes.
And
that's what that scythe is for.
Yeah. So just like go ahead and let go.
Yep.
Cut that cord and move on to the next thing, because really wallowing in this feeling of apprehension or regret or whatever is sort of crying over spilt milk. Like the ship is sailing. Right. Like,
whether you want it so to you, or not. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much of a, like, let's look for this silver lining, or like, let's look for this next chapter, or let's look at what this situation exiting is making room for.
Yeah.
You know, and also this idea of culling something that is rotting or decaying or something. Right. So yeah, sometimes like there are things that we regret to see kind of fall apart, you know, friendships or opportunities or relationships or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, the reality is sometimes those things have been circling the drain for a while, yeah, and finally closing that chapter,
right,
really opens you up to a lot of more satisfying possibilities, but you have to like fucking uncurl those white knuckles and like let go.
Well, something that I thought was really interesting that I like bolded in my notes, so clearly it is very meaningful. It is, to me, it is very important that the querent recognize the ending, you know, not to just like sweep past this ending part. Like, you kind of have to come to a reckoning. So I also think that this card, for, you know, a lot of times it means, you know, yes, putting the past behind you once you've realized that it's coming to an end. But you're also, I think, going a lot of times from a known situation to an unknown situation when this card comes up. To me, it also means you are like getting down to brass fucking tacks, you know, like you are. And that's what I meant by purification. You are getting down to the like the bare bones of a situation. And really like
the bare skeleton bones,
the skeleton bones. And like, and also a lot of times it might be like you said, the train has already left the station. Like, you might be experiencing forces that you have no control over. You also might be in the state of purification, like getting rid of unnecessary shit in your life. Like, mm-hmm. But just to recognize that there's a clear definition of a chapter that is ending is important.
Yeah, that's definitely what this card means. It's definitely kind of like shaking you and being, yeah, like, the sooner that we all recognize and agree that this situation is over,
right, the better.
There is no salvaging it. It is ending, whether you kick and scream, right, or bury your head in the sand or whatever. But the sooner you accept that and recognize it and identify it, the sooner these feelings of apprehension or regret or sadness or confusion will subside.
Right.
So yes, it's definitely one of those things where you just kind of got to bite the bullet and rip the Band-Aid off, yep, which it seems scary and it's a lot to take all at once.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do, you will feel a feeling of relief.
Like,
promise,
if you
promise,
keep
promise,
getting this card, it means you have not done the thing that you're supposed to do. Like, if that card keeps coming up, you're either having a whole lot of chapters end at the same time, or you're dealing with the same chapter over and over and you just aren't ready to face it.
Yeah, usually if you get the same card over and over, yeah, tarot is being super sarcastic, yep, at you, being like,
yeah,
you are beating a dead horse. Let it
here
go.
Is the
stop
horse
asking me about this. You, yeah, here is literally a dead guy and a horse.
On a horse. Yeah.
It's so literal. Like, let it go.
Yeah. Tarot is sometimes real shitty. Okay. But I thought it was interesting that, to me, this is a very introspective card. Like, I've always known the non-invader version, but then you erased it. You wrote,
oh, sorry. No, that was meant to be for Tower.
Oh, well, then that's why I was like, man, okay, because I was down. Well, then that makes a whole lot of sense, because I was like, wow, she really took the invader situation to the next level, because she wrote scorched earth mentality, but that is for the tower. Okay, that, yeah, makes sense. Okay,
sorry.
No, that's fine. I was just like,
that's funny, we're both looking at a Google Doc and she saw me editing it in real time.
I was like, shit, you really do think of this card differently than I do. Please, no, tell me more. No, you don't. We are on the same page for this card.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here, you had a random quote. Let's hear it.
Oh, yes. So I've done this. I've mentioned this before, but I just, if you Google like random quote generator, I can never remember which one I actually used.
Of course
it's
not.
Probably a different one every time.
Yeah.
And so I usually scroll down to the bottom and pick either the last or the second to last. So there is a little bit of wiggle room. But I did this for all the majors. And so my random quote is, our bodies are our gardens, to which our wills are gardeners.
Oh, I love that.
William Shakespeare.
Oh, Mr. Shakespeare. By my troth, that is beautiful. And it also fits well with my soil science death wish.
Soil science.
Soil science.
But I mean, let's go back to like this very literal image. I mean, having the scythe,
yes,
reaping,
yeah,
like this is an agricultural metaphor.
That's right.
For you are harvesting the wheat. So you are taking this farm tool. That's what a scythe is.
Yep.
It's not a weapon.
No.
It's a farm tool.
That's right.
And you are cutting the heads off the wheat to gather it up to
make the bread.
Make some tasty bread.
That's right.
So you, it's a very literal
metaphor.
You're
killing one thing to, like,
you're killing one thing
to give life to another thing.
Right.
Right.
And I mean, in my humble opinion, bread is,
yes,
way cooler than like unground wheat.
You can't
eat it in that form. It's not.
I don't think it's tasty. I don't think it's good.
No, it's not.
No.
So this random quote that I had generated, our bodies are our gardens, to which our wills are gardeners. To me, I mean, obviously you can interpret a lot of different ways, but in the frame of the death card, I take it very literally. Like, your body is going to be the field upon which death reaps.
Yes.
Your body is mutable. It
yes,
will decay.
It will fail.
Death will claim
That's
it.
Right. That's right.
But that your will is the gardener. So there is another part of you that is not the literal mundane part that can have some say over this process and also endures beyond this process.
Mm.
So maybe in the moment you, whether it's a literal death or like this, like we were talking about more the meaning of the card of a figurative death or whatever, but this idea of you can take ownership of this process, even though it is inevitable. Even though, as we were saying, tarot is telling you whatever the question was about, it is dead.
Right.
Just move on. But that's the thing, the moving on, the figuring out, you're tilling your garden. So yes, you're pulling out weeds, or you're removing, you know, your lovely orchid that you felt very guilty for killing and overwatering. And so there are feelings, there's mourning, there's regret. But on the other hand, you know, what are you going to plant there now?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, so
it's like
so
a fertile field, dude. Just plant it.
Yeah. So there is an immense amount of free will, despite death seeming so final and so inevitable.
I was looking at Mr. Matzner's Journaling the Tarot, and wanted to read maybe a couple of these thought-provoking questions you could,
oh yes, I would love to hear
yourself
it.
If you get this card in a spread for yourself. It's a lot of the stuff that we have just mentioned. You can ask yourself, one thing that we haven't mentioned is, what losses from your past do you still need to grieve? How can you best do so? I think that's a good one. And then a lot of questions about what chapter is closing, how can you make sure it's closed, what are you refusing to acknowledge? So lots of the same vein of the importance is that you recognize that this is ending. Well, I had this amazing quote in Miss Barbier's book that I wanted to, and I just want to, I'm going to read it kind of slow because to me it's so beautiful. She says, the way the tarot unfolds, the death card is a Rubicon, not a termination, performing as an intimate apocalypse, a revelation. I love that. An intimate apocalypse, like a little apocalypse,
wow,
happening inside yourself. That blows my fucking mind. And then anybody that says Dude, Rubicon,
Intimate
I'm
Apocalypse
down.
Is going to be the name of my goth yeah. sex shop and
oh, fuck yes.
BDSM dungeon.
Okay, please, may I have a job? I need to work there. I will.
I know you do.
I will sell the accoutrement. Fantastic. Yes, Intimate Apocalypse and Intimate Apocalypse. Let's do it. But just, I love that. And then just, you know, saying anything as a Rubicon is fucking awesome. Like, just but just don't think of it as like she says not a termination, but it's like a crossing. Like all we've been doing almost half of this year is talk about transitions, and that's what this card really is for me. So
yes,
all right, should we move on? We're an hour in. Like, I want to keep going.
Okay, let's do it. Let's just crank it. I think we should just make this a mega episode.
I'm down.
Because I think that they all, I think that these cards function really well.
Together.
As counterpoints
yes.
to one another. Right. And then, of course, so we said death was 13. The devil and the tower actually follow each other.
Yes, back
so
to back.
They are...
highly related.
15 and 16.
Yes.
So... And so let's talk about the devil. I think that's an interesting transition from death because I feel like in a lot of cultures and in Christian cosmology in particular, sometimes they're seen as synonymous. That right. like the Grim Reaper or the devil, death, hell, you know, the place that we consider, that we call the underworld is, you know, there's two of them. There's heaven and then there's hell.
Right.
So one of those afterlives could be hell could. With the devil. So the fact that they are often conflated,
yeah.
I think is very interesting and is something that if you're a reader, either for yourself or for others, particularly for others that might be coming to tarot from a very different perspective and are not familiar with the iconography, that's like a very important thing to separate.
Absolutely.
Because I think a lot of people find them synonymous and
they are
they're both
not.
Kind of dark. They're both having to do with things that we a lot of times like to repress or not talk about.
Yeah.
But very different.
Right.
People tend, I think that it's just human nature that if you put something in the category of bad,
yeah.
like these bad tarot cards, that it tends to just be everything's bad, let's shove it in a box.
Oh, yeah.
But there's different flavors of bad.
That's right.
So
also one person's bad is not, you know, like bad is in the eye of the beholder, motherfucker. I don't know.
Yes.
That sounds fun. Yeah, let's get into it. So something that I thought was interesting is and sorry, I'm quoting a lot from her book because it is so extensive. Miss Barbier says that none of the Renaissance cards presenting the devil have survived. She thinks, you know, that it could be possible that they were destroyed. It could be possible that they were used to cast spells. You would have a spell like to you were casting a spell on someone's behalf for them to win love. And part of that spell would be to have an image of the devil to like represent your baser natures. So it could have been both, but that they were destroyed, and that is a bummer. She did mention too that in the Tarot de Marseille, it often the devil often has sexual attributes of both genders. So I thought that was very interesting. And that the original cards, like the 15th, 16th century cards, were very scary monster type figures. That they were more monstery instead of like the kind of the like Lucifer, Paradise Lost antihero that we kind of see on imagery now.
Yeah, the most famous would be the Eliphas Levi one, which is the very famous Baphomet image
right.
of a goat-headed devil who has female breasts and male genitalia and horns and hooved feet and whatnot. So sort of what we all consider sort of the classic devil. So,
well, interesting point. Levy's work was translated by Arthur Edward Waite of the...
Exactly.
So amazing. Yes. So, yeah. So, like, I didn't see any with... You said that there might be grapes on some. I love that.
Yeah, so in the weight one, you have a devil guy. He actually has an inverted pentagram over his head. He's making a grimacing face. He's all woolly and beardy.
Yes.
And he's crouching up on like a perch, kind of like a bird or something. And in a kind of twisted inversion of the lover's card, which has a woman on one side and a man on the other, and she's standing by like a tree and he's standing by like a flaming bush, which is a, you know, Old Testament thing stuff of God or whatever. And then there is this beneficent angel presiding over sort of this union. Well, so the inversion of this is you have a man and a woman, but they are chained around the neck.
They don't look happy.
They have horns.
He
has a tail that ends in a flame, and she has a tail that ends in grapes. And grapes, of course, being associated with decadence,
right?
With, you know, wine, intoxication,
bacchanalia, right?
Bacchanalia,
yes.
And some of the, like, I'm looking at the Visconti deck, which is from 1490, so a older deck. That guy has he's kind of a typical devil dude. He's got kind of claw feet. He's got this sort of bushy loincloth, which I guess is just his body hair. He's got bat wings, and he's got a pitchfork, and he's got horns and pointy ears. So he's kind of, but if you go back to pre-Christian times, where you have like a Pan figure,
right,
or Cernunnos, the horn man, these images of sort of like a kind of monstrous goat man kind of guy was less a demonic in a Christian sense,
right,
and more daemonic in a Greek sense of him being, or even like Bess from Egyptian mythology.
Yeah.
These sort of little grotesque guys,
trickster guys.
Or even in modern folklore, Bigfoot, like this idea of this kind of wild man.
Right.
You know, this guy who is still, he's kind of human, but he's kind of not.
Kind of an ogre, kind of,
And he's a little wild and scary looking, but also kind of comical.
Right.
So not exactly a monster.
Right.
I mean, there is some danger.
Right.
You know, but it's also kind of fun and exciting. So that is definitely an interpretation of this card that you could go back to, because, so long story short, this card typically usually means like temptation or overindulgence or sin or whatever. So but obviously, like, some of those concepts, particularly the word sin itself, in a Judeo-Christian perspective, a lot of those things I don't find bad.
Right, exactly.
You know, sexuality, enjoying yourself, indulging,
repressed, you know, desires. Repression is the bad thing, not the desire.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, like, you can overindulge, but right. You know, on the other hand, like, trying to pretend that these urges don't exist, or demonizing them or whatever. Can definitely. I've read one interpretation that is like, it's more if you are a slave to your desires,
right?
And so and sort of taking that imagery of these two damned souls that are chained at the foot of Lucifer. This idea of the, even if you don't believe in the Christian devil, the idea that you have these things that maybe you are enslaved to, that you perhaps, like, you know, that now it is beyond your free will necessarily, that things have gotten out of hand. So whatever you were indulging in could possibly be, now you need to reevaluate.
Right. So I found it interesting, a couple of interesting interpretations that I really like keyed on, and what you were just talking about, the need for balance. Like, to me, this card like signifies like, hey, point of note, you might be heading in a direction that might not feel so great if you get too obsessed or too addicted or whatever. So you might need to tilt the scale a little bit the other way. The other interpretation I found is counterculture. And I thought that was really unique and interesting because I've never really thought about that card that way. But like, I think the devil card does represent this like rebel kind of nature that we have, this, you know, like, again, repressed desires or even repressed, you know, ideals, maybe. So,
sure. I mean, there's plenty of like Luciferian currents that take the story of Satan or Lucifer being a cast out angel, right, as being a antinomian figure, that it's a parable about rebelling against the status quo or rebelling against dogma. And as we were just saying, one person's version of sin is another person's version of liberation.
Right.
And
right.
So I think also one of the things that was difficult for me to try to hone in on with this card is that I don't pull it a lot.
I know, me neither.
And usually when it shows up for me, it is warning somebody about either like addictive behaviors, mm-hmm, whether it's a literal addiction to like a substance or just sort of addictive behavior, toxic relationships and things like that. Or self-destructive behaviors. But it's usually a pretty specific thing. It's usually pretty specific. Like,
does it say anything about me that when I was like a teenager, I would always pull that card and go, ooh, the sex card. Could I have had a possible addiction or obsession at that time? Maybe.
Well, that's the, I mean, and I see it sometimes with people that are cheating.
Oh, yeah.
That tends to be one. Yeah. But again, I try to reserve judgment on that.
Sure.
Because I am not into this sort of Judeo-Christian idea of good and evil,
right,
and certain things being just not
bad
on the menu,
right,
at all.
Right.
And you know, I think that you can pick your own poison.
Yes.
You know, I feel like,
and it may not be poison at all.
Well, also, I mean, part of it might be that you're struggling to accept this craving that you have. Mm. And so,
right,
and your instinct to repress it is actually what is the issue.
Right. That makes a lot
of
sense.
So it's not necessarily that you need to reject it.
Right.
It might be that you need to embrace it and figure out how to pursue it in a constructive way. In a way that is not giving you these feelings of guilt and shame, or in a way where you're trying to avoid it and then you end up binging, you know, that kind of stuff of trying to, and keep in mind the card that comes before this is Temperance.
Right.
So those are definitely kind of a pair. One being a virtue and one being sort of the opposite of that, of overindulgence. So this idea of, maybe finding a middle path, you know,
right,
instead of being completely abstemious or completely debauched, you know, is there a time and place for this thing that could maybe be toxic in large doses, but is, you know, what's the consequence of cutting it out of your life? You know, is,
right,
it something that is, you're going to feel like you're denying a part of yourself, or is it something that, like, by trying to repress it,
it's
you
making
actually,
it worse, yeah, or making,
yeah,
it come
you
up
spur
more,
yourself into these,
right,
these habits that are really, like I said, like kind of like binging behavior, or you're trying so hard to be good, and if you fall off the wagon, then you're like, well, fuck it, like,
hello, alcoholism.
Now I'm just,
yes,
gonna go, yeah,
fucking do it, right. That's, yeah, that's, I liked this quote by our good friend Letitia again. She said, the devil is both the tormentor and the place of torment. And I kind of liked that. That really,
ooh,
resonated. What's your random quote?
Mine was, it's always the best policy to speak the truth, unless, of course, you are an exceptionally good liar.
I like that.
How perfect was that?
It's pretty good. I mean, that definitely plays into that whole, like, just idea of maybe you're not looking at this in a way that invokes a middle path, like you said, I think.
Well, it's also, I mean, using your evil powers for good,
right?
I mean, that's also part of the shadow work. It's not just things that make you sad.
Right.
It's things that make you self-destructive. Or scared. Or things you're scared of.
Right.
Or things that make you angry. Yep. You know, things that are dangerous. These dangerous urges that you have.
Or things that aren't socially acceptable to feel. Like, socially acceptable feelings. I mean, we could talk about that shit all day. Right? Like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that repression and, like, trying to avoid these and just be bad, like, these things are bad. Well, maybe sometimes, but I mean, this flavor of bad is different than death, isn't it? You know, like, death is like regret, apprehension,
kind of feeling mourning,
lost,
or like
mourning,
giving time for that thing to end, right?
Sadness, you know, denial.
And this is more about not facing it at all, or just like saying it's all bad. Like, I have these repressed things. I don't want, you know, that I, the devil card to me is like, you need to look at this. Like, look at it more than just shove it away.
Yeah, you need to be honest with yourself, which I like my random quote. It's always best policy to speak the truth unless you're a really good liar.
Which,
But I think that that's part of it. Like, looking at, like, I think a big part of shadow work for some people, me particularly, is a lot of my toxic behavior is not about, you know, trying to establish boundaries with people or trying to let go of feelings of inadequacy or stuff. Mine is the opposite. I have feelings of superiority and I have feelings of anger and violence and sort of impatience and sort of these kinds of feelings. And so and the way that I have started to try to figure out ways to use those impulses for good, because you do get a lot of energy and power from feeling angry or feeling
superior
or these sort of adrenaline junkie habits that people have. They are very powerful. They're very exciting. They literally, like, give you a boost of serotonin and endorphins and adrenaline.
Right.
So, one, I think it's about being really honest with yourself about what are bad habits that you have or what, and then.
And quote unquote bad.
Habits,
but like,
bad. Yeah. So what are things that you are trying to not talk about that are causing you feelings of shame or that you're trying to hide from people? And then, is that something that you need to moderate? You know, is it something that you need to give up cold turkey? Is it something that you could channel in a more constructive way so that you can have your cake and eat it too?
Or is it just something that is part of you that you need to learn how to accept?
Yeah.
And be fine with being open about, you know?
Yeah, and maybe it's something that you were born into a very puritanical culture or household or whatever, so feeling these feelings really freaks you out,
right?
And admitting that you have these cravings or desires. So I think that there's it's basically like, just get honest with yourself,
right? Yeah.
You don't have to be honest with everybody else, which I think is the other thing. I think that is interesting about this card is it's basically telling you, like, let's throw out whatever you think your definition or your family or your religion or your peer group, like, whatever, or the rules and regulations at your job or whatever. Like, let's throw out all of that.
Right.
And get rid of what you think you should or should not be doing that other people are telling you, and be like, what do I want to do?
And is that going to hurt or harm, or is that bad? Like, what's the judgment on it? And then is that judgment true for me, I guess? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's something that is it destructive in my life? You know, maybe it's destructive to people around you, but fuck them. Or maybe it's destructive to other people around you. And
like, maybe you need to moderate that shit. Right.
Yeah. And you weigh it, like, you're like, well, I mean, I would like to indulge in this behavior or this stuff, but it makes people that I really care about very upset or uncomfortable.
Right.
And you know, in the long run, I would rather hold on to those connections right. than alienate those people. Right. But, you know, you got to be really, really honest about it. Yeah. And going back to what you were saying about counterculture or the idea of Satan as an iconoclast, this idea of, you know, you define what is good or bad or what is good or bad for you. We talked about this a long time ago, but I read one time this idea of there's no self-destructive behaviors,
right.
which I don't think is entirely true.
Right.
But I think it's a good thought exercise.
Yes.
Because it's really easy to be, especially when you're doing shadow work or trying to do therapy or whatever, to identify things that you're like, I need to stop doing this.
But that and makes it fucking worse sometimes.
A lot of the times it does. And yeah. also, like, why? Like, this is a thing that I was thinking a lot about when, you know, I get down on myself a lot about being a procrastinator or unproductive.
Same.
But a lot of that is fucking capitalism has me shook.
Absolutely.
This idea that that things that I do for pleasure, like it needs to be, if it's not my career, it needs to be at least like
some sort of performance for people so I can show people what I'm doing. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, Instagram exists for that purpose alone. Like, I need to show you my fucking roles. But do I? No, I fucking don't. I mean, like, we could talk about.
But there's so many things and, you know, people that coping mechanisms that people have in like situations of trauma. Yeah, maybe like certain things that people do in moments of stress. That's the best tool you had for yourself at
right.
the time.
Yes.
If the
absolutely.
Alternative is to, you know, kill yourself or
right.
hurt yourself or something,
yep.
or, you know, if this quote unquote bad habit is your way of coping with a untenable situation, then in that context, it's not a quote bad habit. It's a survival mechanism.
Right.
Now maybe you need to evaluate if you have outgrown that danger, you know.
Right.
If it's time to let go of this technique that is not effective anymore, or you are hypervigilant and applying this technique to situations where maybe it's not warranted. But also I think giving yourself permission to be like, yeah, in a perfect world, if I were like dealing with like perfectly compassionate people in a perfectly, you know,
empathetic world.
And where I was not dealing with, you know, systemic racism and misogyny
right.
and poverty and all of, you know,
right.
obviously
all of those
like,
things.
In a perfect, but dealing with the fact that you do have to deal with these things
right.
and you do have to deal with people that are physically and mentally abusive, you know, beating yourself up about handling that the right or wrong way.
Or whatever way you decide. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Fuck that. You came out the other side, maybe worse for the wear, but you know, that technique or that habit or whatever, given the other options, maybe that was a better option than the other one.
I really enjoy this.
So give yourself some slack.
I was going to say, I enjoy this train of thought because I do think about my like abstention from alcohol as a like, look, the way I coped before when I drank was I drank, and that helped a lot to shut out the horrible things that were, you know, happening to me or how I perceive them to be happening to me. And, you know, 2024 will be 10 years that I have not had a drink, which just, I mean, nothing is more bananas to anyone than me of that. That is just crazy to me. But it's also like, have I sat down and evaluated why I still think I can't trust myself? Like, this is something I wrestle with. And that card to me is very apropos to say, like, well, you know, and it's not like I feel like I don't want to drink in that way anyway, because I know that's not a solution for me anymore. Like, that doesn't make me, drinking doesn't make me more introspective or more like self-aware or anything. So I'm like, but I'm also like, there's a part of me that's super afraid. Like, well, if I have one drink, I'm going to have 20, you know, it's like, I still believe all of the things that society has told me, or that that portion of society, the sober people, have told me, like, you know, it's not, it's, you know, that it's the first drink's going to fuck you up. And I'm just like, well, will it though? And it's not that I'm reconsidering or anything. It's just like, there are times when I examine this thought pattern now, whereas I used to not.
Well, and also, I mean, I think that that's really good, you know, to be like, well, what is it now that I'm afraid of?
Right.
Like, am I using being sober as a crutch to avoid other things? Mm. Being like, okay, well, I shoved alcohol in this Pandora's box and now I'm good.
And now,
I don't have any more problems. Uh-uh. Like,
that's not, you know, true.
Obviously, that's not true.
No.
And then also, you know, going back and being like, thinking about, oh, I shouldn't, like, thinking of all the times that, you know, you made mistakes, or that in the past you wish you had done things differently.
Right.
Well, at the time,
it's the best thing I had to do. Like, it's the only, it's the way I dealt with shit. What, you know?
Yeah. It's not how you would do it now.
Of course
that,
not.
To put a value judgment on it at the time
is, it's not productive.
No, it's not productive. Right. And it got you to where you are now.
Right.
So beating yourself up about it, or trying to replay these moments in your head over and over and over about how you would do things, being equipped with the skills and abilities and life experiences and support you have now, it's apples to oranges.
Right.
Like, you're going to make yourself crazy.
Right.
The other thing is, I mean, this is a whole other topic, but like, the way we treat addiction in this country is so bananas,
ridiculous.
Because
it's
going back to this like cold turkey puritanism, which scientifically does not work for a lot of substances.
Right.
I mean, particularly like, I mean, that's why we have an opioid epidemic in this country. Is part of the problem is that getting people clean and sober off of an opioid, it's not a willpower thing. It's not that you're a bad, disgusting, lazy junkie.
You are physically addicted to this thing, right? Like,
that you have to, and other programs, like in Canada, for example, where you are under the care of a physician that is tapering you with medical grade opiates to retrain your brain to produce these brain chemicals correctly again. And
which is
and
what
also,
needs to be
and to
with,
supervise,
that's the kind of way it needs to be done.
Yeah.
Right. Not just
and
this,
to supervise your withdrawal, because opiate, you can die from it. You
absolutely
can, well, I mean, if you have really extreme alcohol addiction,
yes, you can die from that too. From
you can
from
die
DGs,
from it.
You
so
bet.
It's not Yeah, so it's not just like you need to like lock yourself in a bedroom and sweat
like,
it out.
Sweat it out for a week, whatever. No, it's not like that.
That doesn't work for everybody.
No.
That there is a physical component that is not under your control, and it doesn't have to do with you being a bad or lazy person.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, I think for some people, like I said, like sort of this binging mentality of, oh, well,
I fucked up yesterday. So
if I had, I fell off the wagon. Yeah. So now I'm just gonna go. And I totally understand that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't have an addictive personality, but I do have a fuck it personality. I totally understand that instinct.
Yeah.
Because I am very bingy with food.
Yeah.
You know? So I understand that urge.
Yeah.
And I think that demanding perfection from yourself
is not,
will set you up for failure, because then if you do mess up a little bit, instead of giving yourself credit for trying your best,
right,
you beat yourself up for failing, which I was like, I mean, it's not, there's not two opposing poles of being perfect and failing.
Nope.
There's
the whole spectrum,
there's a whole
in between
world,
and it's,
of trying your best.
And also, like, yeah, that's where we spend most of our time. Most of it. I was going to say, I think I really enjoyed your quote from earlier. Capitalism got me shook. That is 100% accurate. 100%. Like, I think we should all take a little tip from the NAP ministry and be like, rest is resistance, motherfucker. We, you know, we all deserve to just like not grind just for a hot minute.
And that's another meaning of this card is greed or materialism.
Right. Yes.
And I mean, again, there's two ways to look at that. I mean, one could be capitalism got you shook and you are putting this on you.
Right.
But the other thing is,
sometimes you want shit.
Yeah, like treat yourself. Yeah, you know, like right. like feeling like you don't deserve things or right. that you're being greedy because, you know, I don't have this problem, but I hear that other people do of being like, I don't deserve these things or why oh, yeah. am I treating myself like I want to be of service to other people and that I have trouble setting aside time to nurture myself the way I am constantly trying to nurture and mother and nurse people around me. Mm. So that, I mean, and again, it's not one or the other. It right. could be can you be need a to little reject bit materialism, right. or it could be, you know, you need to indulge a little bit.
Take care like, of yourself. Be... Right. And
but you have to be honest.
Yes. Well, and I think
with yourself.
Right.
You don't have to be honest for everybody else. That's the thing that I really like about this quote.
Yeah.
It's always the best policy to speak the truth unless you're a really good liar. Because to me, it's like, I don't want to get into the politics or the right and wrong of being deceptive to other people, but make sure that what you're doing and what you're craving and why you're doing it or why you're not, is not a performance for other people.
Right. Make sure you're being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And don't lie to yourself about what you want and what you don't want.
Yeah. Don't let other people tell you that the things you want or the things you do are destructive or bad.
Right. Listen to your own
because
intuition.
They think they are.
Right. Yeah. No. You know. Throw away all of the things that you have learned. That's A. Okay. Yeah. All right. Moving on to the last boo bad. Scary, scary. And to me, the baddest of the three for sure.
I agree.
100%. It is.
This one is much scarier to get in a spread than death.
Dun, dun, dun. The tower. Because
death is like.
Yeah.
It has wilted. It is dying. It's
fucking over.
We're returning to the soil.
Yes.
New things are on the horizon.
Right. It's lovely.
Tower is like, yo, shit is fucked.
Shit is fucked.
You need to go.
Shit is happening.
You got it. You need to go. You can either go down with the ship or you can fucking go.
Jump out the goddamn window.
Yeah. Right. In fact, one of the weird alternate cards of this is the ship.
Yes.
And I never really understood that until I just word
said it just now.
And that's said, funny. Jump ship. But yeah, this idea of trying to
just get the fuck out.
Yeah
some of the okay I liked some of the names of this card that it has been or is now alternate version, like Tower of Babel for sure, the Blighted Tower, Lightning Fire, Lightning Struck Tower, House of God, which I thought was really interesting, Thunderbolt, House of the Devil, Inferno. Yes, all of these. This card has been called all of those things. I didn't know fuck all about Jesus going to hell the Saturday after he died. Did you know about? Do you know this part of the story?
I don't.
It is called the Harrowing of Hell. Christ takes a little trip to hell on Saturday. And he releases the captives from hell, including Adam and Eve, including. And he just like,
what?
Really? Yeah. I don't know about.
Everybody or just special people?
I don't know if it's just special people. The only thing
I
read was releases captives. I don't know about this. This is from Letitia's book. So I don't think, I mean, it's not of her imagining. She is taking this from historical text, but I don't know if this is like a Bible story. I really don't know because I've only read the Bible once. It was for a class and that is all I got. So either way, let's talk about what this card fucking looks like. Go.
Well, usually it is a tower.
Yes.
And it's being struck by lightning.
Yes, it is.
And usually there are people that are like jumping out of the tower. I didn't actually think about this now, but yeah. I mean, in post 9/11 America, this has a very different image.
It's different, doesn't it?
It hits a little different.
Yeah, because I think we think about the 9/11 towers. People, you know, people are literally, they know they're jumping to their death. And that is the only thing they can do to get out of a burning building. When they don't want to be burned alive. I guess, you know, it's one or the other, right? Like burned alive, fall to your death. I don't know which is scary. They're both pretty fucking scary. But the card, I think, like, to me, the tower, it looks like people are just like, I mean, kind of like just trying to escape the lightning bolt of fire that is raining down upon them.
And I find that some of the cards have a little bit of a, like, anti-capitalist or anti-monarchist bent, because
sure,
in several cards that the tower is literally has a crown on the top and the crown is falling.
Right.
And then sometimes the figures are depicted as being like a king and a queen, like people with the crown on their head. So this is sort of like that ups, downs, turn it all around hokey pokey of the Wheel of Fortune, but like
in a bad
all at once
way.
And bad.
Yeah, real bad. Real bad. Sulfuric rain sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. The tower has usually got a big old crack in it or a crack somewhere. You wrote sparks are yod letters. Tell me more.
Yeah, that was a description by Waite in his pictorial key of the tarot. Is that, and I don't know a lot about Kabbalah and what he was trying to sort of depict, but yeah, the weird little sparks of fire when you look at the Waite Smith deck are actually the Hebrew letter Yod.
Yeah, that okay. That's okay, so this card, I liked, Leticia talks about our friend Alejandro Jodorowsky in his, I think it's called The Way of Tarot, and he calls it an uncorking, and I liked this, and Barbier also talks about, like, uncorking a champagne bottle can be very precarious, like, sometimes it goes well. Other times, the cork flies off, fucking goes through a window, breaks some shit.
I literally have a broken window in my home from some previous
champagne-related situation.
Popping. Yes. Oh, people are like, is that a bullet hole? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure somebody tried to pop a bottle of champagne over the sink and straight into this window.
Right. So some of the keywords for this card are definitely like, it's fucking mayhem, just upheaval. Shit is happening.
And it's abrupt. It is sudden and abrupt.
Yes.
It is not like a slow roll.
No. Nope.
Like,
shit is tumultuous right the fuck now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is going completely tits up.
Yes. Like, as I am pulling this card for you, you are in the midst of some bullshit. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Well, if it's in a Celtic cross and it's in the past, okay. But like, it doesn't matter where it lands in this fucking spread. There's some way shit is fucked up for you right now. Right now.
Yeah, I would say, because my advice to this is usually, listen, shit is going fucking sideways. Trains left the station.
Yeah.
There's no point in trying to undo it.
Yeah.
So you just need to get the fuck out and just get to work on the aftermath or getting away from the situation. And,
but like, you have to ride this out. Yes. Like,
yeah, you trying to
can't make it stop,
run around and undo it or triage it.
Uh-uh.
Is
nope.
Just you are going to end up in the middle.
Yes.
Like, you just need to be like, not my circus, not my monkeys.
Right.
I need to move on to the next thing, because like, now, I mean, like a literal disaster. You're like, okay, well, you know, the house is on fire. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I need to move on to literally the next thing, which is outside. Like,
outside this on fire situation. Yes.
Yeah.
So I liked all the things you wrote about when you read it in the reverse. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I see it as kind of, a lot of times I read reversals as sort of like the normal upright meaning, but it's sort of blocked or stagnant or something. But
same.
The whole meaning of this card is that things are going tits up. Like, literally, there are people that are pictured being like heels overhead.
Yeah.
Like falling out of a building.
Right.
So it could not be more literal in that things are changing real fast.
Yes.
So it being reversed, you know, sometimes I read it as you're kind of on a collision course.
Right.
So this might, like, and it depends, like, as you were saying, in the spread and what else is around it.
Sure.
That maybe it's like, hey,
here's your warning.
You need to turn right around, bro. Like, all the way around.
Right.
Just
walk away. Yeah. It's fine.
Walk away.
While you still can.
You know, and this is actually a really good early warning, because you actually have an opportunity to get ahead of it. It's inevitable.
Right.
And, you know, and I try to tell people, because I kind of have this schadenfreude, that I'm like, there's kind of a relief and feeling invigorated about knowing that something's fucked.
Right.
And just noping out and moving on and not having to deal with all the people that are freaking out.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean,
just be like, you know what? Nope. I'm out.
Right.
This is a complete shit show. I can't unfuck it for anybody.
Right.
Whatever kind of martyr complex I have or whatever.
There's
whatever,
a freedom in it, right? So, like, yeah. I mean, this is going to sound like completely out of left field, but maybe not. When I read this book called 4,000 Weeks, and it's about, like, basically your average lifespan is 4,000 weeks. And he talks about, this is a book for, it's more of a philosophy book, but I made my workbook club read it, which was hilarious because it's very philosophical. There were, like, a side of people that could not stand it because they're very, like, into being productive and into capitalism. And this book is basically saying, you're gonna die. None of it fucking matters. But, like, in a good way, in, like, a freeing way, because it's like, well, you know the ultimate end, right? So, like, now it's just about what are you gonna do with this precious fucking time you have? And it doesn't mean, like, if you don't spend every single waking second of it doing something, you're an asshole. Just, like, give into that freedom of knowing you're fucked right up front.
Yes.
Yes. But it's very liberating to me to know that. And that's why if I pull this card for myself, usually the collision course is already happening. I know 100% what it is. And I just need to accept it and figure out, like you said, figure out the aftermath.
Yeah. And well, also, once again, I don't have this problem, but I hear that other people do.
I like how you asterisk this.
Things are getting fucked. People are running around freaking out.
Yeah.
And you feel like some kind of obligation.
Right.
To help, triage it.
Right.
To help, to calm people down, to try to find solutions, to kind of let people down gently. Mm. You need to just turn around and go.
Yeah.
You open this door, you see that, like, everyone's running around, screaming,
just, like,
shit's on fire. And you just slowly, Homer Simpson.
Back into the bushes.
You're like, nope.
No, thank you. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to, whatever that part of you that has this sort of, you know, either it's martyr syndrome or just you feel obligated to people, or you see people freaking out and in pain and you feel like you have this obligation to help people. It's not going to help
right now.
You're just going to be in it too.
Right.
You know, like, everybody just needs to turn around and go.
Just
like,
leave the burning building. You wouldn't stay in a burning building. I mean, you might try to go get your cat, whatever. I mean, it's okay. Let the firemen rescue the kitty. It's good. Just go. Yeah, and you also said, like, having it reversed might mean delusions of grandeur. I like that.
Yeah, self-destructiveness. Also, I see, and again, this kind of will tie into
the devil
where it is.
Oh, yeah.
I see a lot, if you're doing Celtic Cross, that position above the current, which I usually interpret as sort of the way the situation seems or appears.
Right.
or in the position, the second to last card, which is usually your unconscious hopes and fears.
Yes.
So if it's in a position that has to do with like kind of your unconscious or things that you are anxious about, it could be that the destruction is self-destructiveness.
Right.
Or that you perhaps have this scorched earth mentality where if one thing sucks, it's just, well, fuck everything.
Right. You're like you're imagining the extreme. Yeah.
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 So it also kind of depends. Like if you see other cards that have to do with things like that of sort of that would indicate that the anxiety or the alarm is not real. But that to me is usually if it's reversed.
Right.
And also it is in a position that would indicate, or it's with other cards that have to do with this is not the reality.
Right.
So you are imagining that this is a tower situation and it's actually not.
Right.
But that's a very specific meaning. Usually it's, and also the thing is, because this card is like so dramatic and so immediate and so like really wild amount of upheaval.
Yeah.
Usually whoever you're reading for knows exactly what this is. Oh yeah.
They know what their tower is for sure.
Yeah. And usually they're asking, how do I fix it? Or what do I do? Or whatever. And the answer is, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
It is not your problem anymore.
Like, get the fuck out, but also just buckle up because it's happening. I mean, it's happening. You can't stop it. But also, like, if you are just, I wrote this in my notes, like, if you're just on the leading edge of the tower situation in your life, like if you don't really see the calamity yet, you don't know how to fathom it at that point. You just have to trust that it is not good and you need to turn around. Just get the fuck out. Like you said. And then like you will probably be like a more clearly a more aware and prepared person after this ordeal, but it is just like, it is gonna be fucking hard, whatever is about to happen. Just know it's gonna be hard. Know you gotta turn around, get the fuck out. Just, I liked Barbier says, you lose some foundational parts of yourself at the least expected time, but once you're past the surprise, there is great wisdom to be found.
That is so similar to the random quote that I generated, which is, no great improvements in the lot of mankind are possible until a great change takes place in the fundamental constitution of their modes of thought.
Holy shit.
John Stuart Mill.
Wow.
Like, I like that both of these quotes use very similar language where yours says foundational and mine says fundamental.
Yes.
But I mean, it's a very literal interpretation of a tower falling down, like literally the structure, mm-hmm. the literal foundation is getting fucked.
Yep.
So that's really striking how similar these quotes are.
I did not really read your quote in full when I pulled that quote. So that just shows you how, yeah, that's crazy.
But it is a very like your quote is, there's an optimism to
it. Yes, absolutely.
It's, you know, this is making way for maybe something better, but it's gonna, you're really going to have to flip your priorities or flip your outlook or flip your goals, because the trajectory that you are on is just not going to be an option.
No. So, right. It's like, yeah, because it's literally going to blow up. Like, it's literally going to explode. So, right. And you just, you have, so, like, get ready for, get ready for pain. I mean, just get ready for some very intense, uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah, of having to just turn away and walk away, which to me, again, is similar hard, but different to the death card,
yes.
because that seems very final and sudden and stuff. But But in real life, it's very much like of this slow burn of like acceptance.
This, yeah. And Tower is the kind opposite.
Of almost, yeah, of kind of maybe periods of numbness.
Right.
Of, you know, regret, of feeling like things were left unsaid, or loneliness or loss, whereas this one is not.
Not that. Right.
I mean, you're going to have to say goodbye to the situation,
like,
but it isn't gonna be now.
Mm-hmm. It's now, and it's probably not.
It's already happening.
Well, and it's not something you probably want to happen. So that's the other thing. It's like, but just know that through the other side is a wiser. You know, like I said, it may not be better, but either way, you're gonna be different. You will be a different person.
Letting go of something that is going completely fucked.
Yeah.
Is definitely going to feel relieved.
Yes.
And you're going to be glad that you got out when you did.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, you know, it's sort of like you might feel deer in the headlights, or you might feel, I don't know, whatever, depending on what the situation is, feel this sense of obligation. Mm. Of like, I'm the captain, I'm gonna go down with the ship. Mm. Or whatever. Mm-mm. Just let go of what
that.
You thought your priorities or responsibilities were, or yeah, or these ideas of no, I can fix it.
Nope.
Or,
save yourself.
So whatever it is that is making you think you need to ride this out, you need to sever that train of thought
right
now.
Yes.
Like, and when you do, like, There's a million reasons why you think that you owe it to yourself or to other people or to whatever, or to what your goals used to be. Like, just, you need to just let that go.
Yeah.
And you can mourn it later or whatever, or be like, go back and retrace your steps and be like, how did this happen or whatever. But like, that's for later.
Yeah.
And trust me, when you do have that moment of reflection of the dust has settled, and you are kind of evaluating like what went wrong or what you could have done differently or whatever, you're going to feel very relieved.
Yes.
That you were not there for
the complete destruction. Meltdown. Yeah. Don't stay for the complete destruction. And
you will be relieved. It is scary. And you're like, what am I going to do? But you can worry about that shit later.
Yes. Just get through the immediacy of the fucked upness. Right.
Yes. Yeah. The anxiety about what am I going to do? Why is this happening?
No, like, fuck that.
You can worry about that later. Yeah. When you leave.
You don't have time for the analysis. Yeah, this is not a introspection analysis card. This is a
no.
This is a fucking GTFO card.
Yeah, it's like, it's sure. Already, it, dude. And if you
it's
get
already
Death
happening.
And Tower,
yeah, oh yeah. If you get Death and Tower, been, like, I don't know that.
Like,
oh, I think that has happened to me. Yeah.
I don't know.
But like, I mean, clearly if you get those two cards, you something is fucking happening in your life right now.
Yeah.
Wow. This has been great. I'm so glad we did a mega. I didn't want to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was good. Sorry, everybody. 2 hours of our delightful voices. You're going to love it. Maybe take a lunch. take a little lunch break in the middle. And then come back for the worst card of all at the very end. My favorite meme is the Smithwaite deck, like the cover, and it's like, oops, all towers, and it's just a picture of the tower. Makes me laugh every fucking time. I love it.
Yeah, it's very much that meme of the dog that's in the flaming room that's like, this is fine.
This is fine. Everything's
it's
fine.
Not, you know it's not. You gotta go.
That's right. Oh, that is for sure. Well, this has been super awesome. I love it when we do the cards interpretations because we both have such like similar but different styles. So I'm super excited that we did this. Yay! Yes.
And I really like, I don't think I've ever really compared and contrasted them. So
no, I know.
Just,
this is a good exercise.
Just diving into the different flavors of bad, like realizing that like, it's not all just one flavor.
That is subjective.
There's a whole rainbow. There's a whole rainbow of bad.
Whole rainbow of badness. But it is
the rainbow.
But it is
bad.
But it is also subjective. Like it's bad and then good. So something to look forward to. Little nugget for your holidays. On that note, shit. We'll see you all after I don't know, after a time. We'll be back next week with some more cool shit. I don't know. All right. Well, have a lovely afternoon, evening, morning, and we'll talk next time. Hocus pocus, bitches.